Morning. Welcome to CPC. If I haven't met you, my name is Dominic. If you haven't been here in a while, no, it's not normally this cold in here. It used to be, then it wasn't, and now it is. But come back next week and we'll see what it's like then. We're in the, as you can tell, also our environment changes, which is, I think, kind of fun. So we share this space. If you're not familiar with one of the tenants here of this building is Broadway by the Bay, and so they're in the middle of setting up for Joseph, and so if you're interested in seeing that show, there's information that goes out in our email. You can get some discount to see that, and I'm sure it's going to be a great show, as we can see next week, so that's a lot of fun to be here together. We're in the midst of finishing up, in the midst of Matthew, about to finish up the Gospel of Matthew, and today we're going to be in Matthew chapter 26, and it's a great spot to be. It's kind of the beginning of this season when this last week or so of Jesus' life, this kind of leading up to where he will give his life on the cross and towards Easter and resurrection. And what's great about this is that just this past week with Lent starting, it's a great moment for us to kind of stop and pause and consider what Jesus has done. Lent is this time of preparation. It's a time of introspection. It's a time of kind of re-examining us in light of a story bigger than us. And that's kind of, that's my desire for you this morning. My desire for you is that as we journey through these next few minutes together, that there would be a sense that you are able to pause, that you are able to reflect, that you are able to consider what the story of Jesus means and what it particularly means for you. Today we're going to look at three kind of brief passages, three brief experiences in this story of this last week of Jesus. And what we're going to do is do a little bit differently. I'm going to take the first story and the third story, and we're going to look at those quickly. And then we're going to look at the middle story, which at first doesn't seem like it's going to fit, but actually has a lot to say about both of the other stories and what's going to happen next in Jesus' life. And I want to walk through this and offer some observations along the way that I see in this. And at the end, we're going to do something a little bit different. And we're going to give you space, I'm going to give you space to reflect on this, to think about this, to turn your mind in the midst of this Lent season, to turn your mind to what Jesus has done and what he's done for you and what that may mean now for you and as you move forward through this life. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 26. It's going to begin in verse 1. The verses will be on the screen above me. The first scene that we'll look at here, Matthew chapter 26, beginning in verse 1. Matthew says this, that when Jesus had finished saying all these things, the chapters before, he said to his disciples, "As you know, the Passover is 2 days away, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. Then the chief priests and the elders of the people assembled in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and they schemed to arrest Jesus secretly and to kill him. But not during the festival, they said, or there may be a riot among the people." Now, a couple pieces of information for you. The Passover was the feast, the annual feast in the Jewish calendar. One historian estimates over 2 million people showed up in Jerusalem during Passover. And even if that number is not totally correct, you get the sense that this was a massive, massive gathering of people. So when they say, "We don't want a riot to happen," you can understand why. Passover told a story. It told an ancient story. It was a story of God rescuing people. It was a story of God rescuing people from oppression. And Jesus says this moment, this particular feast is going to be interesting because he says this particular feast will involve who he calls the Son of Man. Now, if you've been with us for a little while, you know, and if you haven't, here's the idea behind the Son of Man. The Son of Man is a Jewish term from Jewish theology that was the person, the figure who would receive power and authority from God to defeat the oppressive powers of the world. The Son of Man was this person who would, or this people who would embody what God has for this world, who would bring it about. It was a figure about sacrifice. It was a figure of vindication in the world. The little twist, though, as Jesus tells it, and Jesus views himself as this Son of Man figure, the twist, though, to the story is that you would expect that when he says the Son of Man's going to Passover, the largest gathering of our nation and the people who believe like we believe, you would imagine some sort of victory processional. But instead, Jesus says this Son of Man, that he's speaking here of himself as this person, is going to be handed over and crucified. In other words, this Son of Man who's come to defeat the oppressive powers of the world will be defeated, it seems, by them. Crucifixion was how Rome won. And Jesus says, this one whom God has given power, who's going to bring victory into the world, will seemingly be defeated by it. If you were there listening to this, you probably would have gone, well, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. There's a story to come. That's the first scene Matthew tells us. We're going to skip the second, go right to the third scene that Matthew tells us down in verse 14. It says, then one of the 12, one of the closest to Jesus, one of the people who's been following him the longest, seeing everything that God has been doing through this Son of Man figure, Judas Iscariot, he said, Judas Iscariot goes to the high priest and says, what are you willing to give me if I deliver Jesus over to you? So they counted out for him 30 pieces of silver. That was probably 6 months' wages. And from then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over. So again, Matthew gives us a little bit twist on this story. That one who has journeyed with Jesus, who has seen him enact this Son of Man type stuff for several years, is also going to be the one that betrays him. That this one Judas is going to be part of the process and set in motion the sacrificial death of Jesus. So Matthew gives us these two ends in this part of the chapter. He gives us this end where Jesus says, hey, we're going up to Passover, but something's going to happen. This crucifixion, this death is going to happen. And then Matthew gives us this other end where there's this part where one of Jesus' closest followers is part of this. So there's this whole train of motion going towards what's about to happen on the cross and the resurrection, the empty tomb. And in the middle of this, Matthew tells us that this happened here in Bethany, which again, also as we read it, is going to kind of go like, how does that fit in? But I think we're going to try to see it from an angle that actually is going to add more context than maybe you've considered before. Here's what Matthew says happens in between these two things, beginning in verse 6, down through verse 13, it goes like this. While Jesus was in Bethany at the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar, a very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table, which is how they ate in that day. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste? They asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Aware of this, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. And truly I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. So the story begins with a woman in an alabaster jar, which was a type of jar used for very expensive fragrances. And depending on the type of fragrance that she used, this could have been up to worth like a year's worth of wages. So this was a very expensive thing that she had. And what she does is she comes and pours it onto Jesus' head as he's reclining there at this table like they would do in those days to eat. Which, again, is a really nice story. It's a really beautiful thing. But, again, the question is, why, Matthew? Why are you telling us this? Why do you want to highlight this? Why does Jesus say, hey, of all the stories that are going to be told, this story is going to get told? Like, not the feeding of the 5,000, although it's going to get told in its own way, or not this. He's like, this one, explicitly, he says, in the moment, this one's going to be told. I think there are two reasons why this story and why her act is so critical and why Jesus says, like, this is something you need to remember. And the first reason he says it explicitly in here in verse 12, he says that she's doing an act that is like an act of preparation. Like, it's his act of preparation for his upcoming burial, for this crucifixion he talked about. Like, for Jesus, in his mind, the story is about to culminate in the cross, in the empty tomb. What's coming, everything's moving towards this moment, and this woman's playing a role in this moment. She's preparing everything, preparing Jesus for this moment, but that's about to come. But I think there's more to it. It's not just simply a preparation. I think part of the power of this story is that her act of pouring this expensive perfume, of breaking this bottle and pouring it all over Jesus. This act is not only preparation, yes it is, but it's also a picture. I think her act is a picture of what Jesus himself is about to do. Think about it this way. This woman gave the most valuable thing that she had, a year's worth of wages for this one vial. In that day, most of the money and the wealth was kind of concentrated at the top. She probably didn't go home to her cabinet of expensive perfumes and said, okay, I think I'll pick that one today. This was probably her thing. This was like her wealth. This was the thing that she, the disciples are right, could have sold, could have got some money out of this, a lot of money out of this. It was the most valuable thing she had, and she gave it away. I wonder if part of what Matthew wants us to grasp and wants his audience to grasp is this idea of sacrifice, that it was costly for her, and that this sacrifice is what made the gift a gift. I mean, think about it. Like, if she had just grabbed, like, the bottle of olive oil off the table and was like, dumping it on Jesus, he would just been like, oh, that's nice, strange, that's nice. And maybe Jesus could have still like pulled the imagery, maybe he would have like, hey, this is preparing me for burial as olive oil is flowing all over his head. But the power, I think, of this story, even the reason we're talking about it today, is that like this cost her something. This was a sacrifice on her part. And the sacrifice, so it made the gift a gift. As we get farther down the story, we'll see Jesus do the exact same thing. That Jesus gives what's most valuable to him, his life, his only possession, his life for people. I think Matthew tells a story, and as we see, Jesus points out this is a preparation for what's about to come. I think it's also a picture of what is about to come. The sacrifice is what makes the gift the gift. It's interesting. If you're like me, I think we live in a culture and a day where we tend to avoid sacrifice. Like, we'll give as long as it doesn't really cost us. Like, we'll commit to go somewhere unless we have a better option come up a little bit later. Like, this is idea, like, we don't really want to go out on a limb. We don't really want to take a risk. We want to avoid. We somehow maybe have gotten in our minds that sacrifice is wrong, that sacrifice has somehow to be avoided. But what if sacrifice is part of the gift? What if a gift becomes a gift because of sacrifice? Or maybe you're on the other side of it. Maybe you've been in the position where like you feel like your life is like continual sacrifice. Like you feel like you're walking with God in this pathway. That whether maybe it's like with your family as a parent, you're like, you know what? I labor and I strive and I'm giving in ways that no one ever sees. And I'm hoping and trying to set my kids up for the best kind of life that they could have. And you've been in a place where you've given and you've given and you've given. And maybe you're at a place where you're like wondering if it's doing any good. Maybe you're like going into work and you're the first one in and you're the last one out and you're working harder than everyone around you, it seems like, and you're putting all this extra time and you get to this part like, I want to do this. I feel like it's this kind of sense of calling on my life, but at the same time, you're wondering, is it doing any good? Maybe you know sacrifice. Maybe you're very familiar with sacrifice. Maybe you're on the other side of it wondering, is this doing any good? I think the disciples saw the same thing. They saw this sacrifice that this woman did, and what was their comment? They said, what a waste. They see her sacrificing this thing of incredible value, and their first thought is like, what a waste. There isn't anything good out of this. Did you see Jesus' response to that? Jesus says, this isn't a waste. This is a beautiful thing. A few days later, Jesus, to get ahead of the story, will give his life and die on a cross. And certainly there were people who thought, what a waste. But no, there's something beautiful in that. Jesus has a different perspective on sacrifice. For Jesus, it's not a waste, but it's something beautiful. You can see that in your own life. You wouldn't be where you are without sacrifices. You wouldn't be where you are without those sleepless nights studying. You wouldn't be where you are without those conflicts you had to push through. You wouldn't be where you are with those days that you struggled to get out of bed. You wouldn't be where you are without those tears that couldn't stop flowing. It's somehow part of your story, and we've gotten to a point maybe where we avoid telling those parts, where we think, what a waste. There's nothing good out of that. And we're siding with the disciples where maybe we need to get on side with Jesus. No, no, no. Maybe there's something beautiful in that. Maybe the sacrifice is part of the gift. I love this woman's action, and I love that Jesus points it out and says, this is something we need to pay attention to. This is part of the story that needs to get told when we tell the big story. It's part of what she's doing, that she's reorienting our minds around the whole perspective of sacrifice. That maybe what seems like a waste is actually quite beautiful to Jesus. It makes Judas's betrayal all that more tragic, because Judas, back in the passage we read a moment ago, Judas's question, his ask, and to betray Jesus is, what will you give me? I mean, contrasted with this woman who gave everything away, Judas says, what can I get? Judas was willing to take 6 months of wages. This woman was willing to pour out a whole year's worth. You kind of sit there and like, gosh, what a tragic turn of events. We live in a world where maybe there's two ways to go about things. That there's a seeking and says, I have to have something more. And there's someone else who's discovered that part of the gift is giving it away. Part of the gift is a sacrifice. You say, well, maybe Judas was just greedy. Maybe he wanted some money. And some of the other gospel writers tie that in. And I think that's probably part of it. But do know that greed is just a symptom. Greed is a symptom of disappointment. Maybe Judas heard this story. Maybe Judas, watching the scene of this woman, said with the other disciples, what a waste. And he decided, you know what? That is not the type of Jesus that I want to follow. Yeah, you can have your sacrifice. You can lift that up. You can tell her story, but I don't want anything to do with that. It's a fascinating contrast between this woman who desires to give the very best thing she had and Judas who says, I need more because I don't like that way of life. Maybe sacrifice is part of the gift. Maybe sacrifice is what makes the gift a gift. The New Testament writers, as they try to process what will happen, Jesus giving his life, they use this idea. They use this idea to try to embody and imagine God's love. Because it's a strange thing to say. Like, it's a strange thing if you had to define or draw or describe your love for a spouse or for your child or for a friend. It's a strange thing to do. And you can imagine that they could use lots of options. But one of the things that the New Testament writers, the followers of Jesus, use is they use the image of sacrifice. For example, 1 John chapter 4, verse 10. He says this, that this is love, not that we loved God, this is something that God started, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. That God gave. And he didn't just give like a little bit. He didn't go, you know what, you can have Jesus. It's kind of been a long week this week. You can take him for a little bit. No, this was something that he gave, and it says that he gave sacrificially for you to be made new. One of the first verses growing up in church that we were ever told and ever challenged to memorize was John 3:16. You probably have heard that, even if you're not necessarily consider yourself a church person. But it says in that, it embodies in that God gave his one and only son. to which we just like read over. Good, okay, that's nice, God, thanks very much. Can I get a bit more? Can I get a bit more? I need a little bit more. And sometimes we kind of like play the Judas card. Yeah, yeah, that's nice, but can I get some more of that? And we realize, no, 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 you don't understand. Like, God gave his son, what mattered most to him, his son for you. If you don't think it was for you, because the verse starts that it was for you. For God loved the world that he gave. God loved, and he didn't just give a little bit. He's like, you can have this portion, I'm not using it. He gave sacrificially, and it changed the entire trajectory of the universe. Sacrifice is part of the gift. Sacrifice is what Jesus will do. Sacrifice is where these stories are heading. Sacrifice is maybe something you and I don't think enough about. Maybe you come in here today. Maybe you've come in and you don't necessarily think about God in that way. You know, sometimes it's easier to think about God as God who gives a little bit. Or like God who gives, like if it's convenient. Like, I don't really want to ask him because there's all this other stuff going on in the world. And so I'll just kind of let him be, and then like I'll just kind of wait patiently for like when it's my turn. No, 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 yeah. God doesn't just give a little bit. God gives to the uttermost limits. But the love of God for you is not God giving a little bit, it's God giving sacrificially for you. If you're honest with yourself, did you come in that way today? Are you sitting here today thinking, yes, this is a God who pours out, and as we talked about a couple weeks ago, everything of his is available to me? Is that the kind of God that you think about when you think about God? Because Jesus, that's the kind of God he's embodying. That's the kind of God that he's pointing towards. That's the kind of God that this woman's act demonstrates to the world. And he's like, hang on, everybody. I just want to get this down, Matthew. You got your pen and paper because you're going to need to write this part down. I want this story told. Like, this mattered to Jesus. This was important to him. Like, this got it. Somehow she got it. She got that sacrifice is part of the gift. She got that what God is doing in the world, that what Jesus is about to do is give sacrificially what matters most. This is what God has done. This is what God has done for you. I love how one Bible commentator talked about love, this whole mythical thing about love, and we don't really know how to put it, but he says this. He says, love never calculates. Love never thinks how little it can decently give. Love's one desire is to give to the uttermost limits. Is that how you think about God? Probably, if you're honest, if you think about God even as God as love, you're probably more in the middle of that statement, right? That God somehow God's love is like thinking how little I can decently give. No, 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 no. This God, this Father of Jesus, is a God who gives to the uttermost limits. And he'll prove it by giving sacrificially of his son. The God who calls you, the God who I believe created you, is the God who gives to the uttermost limits. It's a God who embodies this through sacrifice. I want to end this morning, and I know we've got a little few minutes. I want to end this morning with something a little bit different. In some traditions, after they'll go through a text like this, they'll just take a few moments and be still and just consider what this says and what God has been speaking to you through this. We kind of do this, you know, during the offering time. We often don't do it at this particular part, but I want to do this now. I want to just take a few moments in this time of this Lent season and these texts that are talking about Jesus giving sacrificially and giving sacrificially to you. I want you to just take a few moments and listen. What kind of God do you hear when you think about God? Do you hear a God? Do you think about God giving to the uttermost limits? Do you think about a God who's redefined sacrifice as not a waste, but the very means of your renewal? He's done this for you. through Jesus. I want you to think about these texts. I want you to think about the first story that we read about Jesus announcing and predicting that, yes, he is the one who's going to deal with the oppressive powers in the world, and yet the world's going to say, not so fast, but somehow it's not going to end the story, as we'll see in the coming chapters. That somehow his sacrifice is actually part of the gift. I want you to think about Judas and think about the times where we say, you know what, enough. This is not a God I want to be a part of. Because if we're honest, there are probably moments like that. You probably have had moments like that. You might be in that moment right now. And I want you to think about this woman, that somehow she got it. That somehow she pulled that vial of perfume off her shelf. It's like, I know what I'm going to do. Oh, no, 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 that would be a waste. How about the, like, you know, the little one down below? What about the one that's like a little bit, you know, you only have a little bit left of that one. You could just, you know, pour that on. He won't know any different. No, 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 no. So for her, the sacrifice, the cost to her, the loss of all that potential money that she could have got was part of the gift. This is something she wanted to do. There was something about Jesus that's like, no, this is worth the cost. I want you to think about her, and I want you to think about Jesus. That he goes to the cross, and he says about you, about this world, about you sitting right where you are, that you are worth the cost. That might be a very familiar thing for you. That might be a very foreign thing for you today. You might be somewhere in the middle. But this is a God who loves, who gives to the uttermost limits, and he's done it for you. The season of Lent that we begin this week, I want to just take these next few moments and begin with just for you alone with God. There'll be some music like we do underneath, but it's really just your personal reflection. And maybe if you don't know anything else to do or anything else to say, you just say, God, what do you want to say to me? And maybe just leave yourself open. I'm going to start us with a word of prayer, and then we'll just have a couple moments of silence and just be still before God and allow him to speak to you as we reflect on these three scenes of this passage. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for sacrifice of a thing that we tend at times to avoid, or we don't want to talk about, or we're embarrassed or ashamed, maybe at a place, God, where we wonder if there's any good. Would you help us to hear that what we or others may say is a waste is actually something beautiful? Would you help us to see that sacrifice is part of the gift? Would you, in these next few moments especially, turn our attention to Jesus? That what's coming on the cross, that he died for our sins, for the things that have turned us away from God, to renew us set us on a new course. Heavenly Father, we open our minds and the ears of our hearts to you. Speak in these next few moments as we reflect. As we listen, would you stir to mind the scriptures? Would you stir to mind these passages? And would you challenge us as we leave here today with this time of reflection and these songs and these final words to more closely embrace Jesus and to model this kind of life in the